So let's jump right to that Akamai test. I believe Kevin Kudlak was here a couple years ago and teased out the sort of interplay with all the different Akamai cases. There were five total. They went up and down to the Federal Circuit, up to the Supreme Court and back. We ended up with Akamai 5 or Akamai V, and it confirmed that there's two circumstances where we're going to have a divided infringement or a joint infringement situation. Circumstance one is where one party directs or controls the other's performance. And in that situation, the Federal Circuit said, we're going to be able to attribute the actions of that second party back to the first party. So directs or controls. That's the first circumstance. Second circumstance is when we have a joint enterprise situation. So this is going to be two or more parties that are all working together in concert, and that's going to be considered a joint enterprise, and the acts of any one of them is attributable to all of them. So let's take a look at what those tests ended up being articulated for each of these circumstances. So for the directs or controls circumstance, there were two prongs to that. And the first prong was that there's a conditioned participation in an activity or the receipt of a benefit on another's performance of the claim steps. So in that situation, if one party is conditioning participation or a benefit on performance of steps, then those steps that are being performed can be attributable back to that first entity. And then the second prong is that that first entity also establishes the manner or the timing of that performance. So the two prongs. And it was an interesting articulation of that test because prior to that time, if you remember, we talked about Judge Yackel's decision in 2007, kind of had the lay of the land. There was no Federal Circuit cases at the time. Well, we saw cases starting to develop. In 2007, there was BMC case. In 2008, we had the Muni auction case. And the way it was developing at the time was that divided infringement or joint infringement was a narrow circumstance, and that you would only have it in a vicarious liability situation. So there had to be agency, or there had to be an express contract that was requiring the performance of certain steps. Well, this was considered to be a broader interpretation of that, and this was the Federal Circuit's response to some guidance from the Supreme Court. So we're going to see how that plays out later today. But back to, there were two circumstances, you'll recall. So we had a second circumstance, and that was our joint enterprise circumstance. Four requirements for joint enterprise situation: that there be an agreement, whether express or implied, that all of the entities involved in that joint enterprise have a common purpose, that there's a community of pecuniary interest in that purpose, and that each entity has an equal voice in the direction of the joint enterprise. So if you can get all four of those factors among a group of entities, then they're going to be joint and severally liable. Each of the entities can be charged with infringement in that scenario. So, as I mentioned, we're going to be focusing on that directs or controls test today. That's actually what was applicable in the Akamai case, and it's what is applicable in the other two cases we're going to talk about. And just to refresh what happened in Akamai, is the Federal Circuit concluded that Limelight was directing or controlling the actions of its customers. And specifically, there were the tagging and serving steps. Now, Limelight was a CDN provider, and for the customers to receive that benefit, the CDN network, they would have to sign a contract. The contract itself expressly required those steps, the tagging and the serving steps. But also importantly, there was a technological requirement aspect to it. There was a technological prerequisite to it that if they didn't comply with tagging and serving, then they weren't going to be able to interface with the CDN network either. So in addition to that legal obligation, there was a technical requirement that was in place in the Akamai test. So that met the conditioning prong. And then with respect to the second prong of this directs or controls test, the Federal Circuit concluded that Limelight had established the manner or timing of performance, because if they didn't follow these steps, then they weren't going to get the access to the CDN network. So those are the two steps in Akamai. How was that going to play out? Remember, I think following Akamai, we all wanted to see, is it going to be limited to its facts? Is it going to be expanded? Is it going to get broader, narrower? How is this going to play out? And so one interesting case from 2017, this was from January, was Eli Lilly. And Eli Lilly was a physician-patient situation that required the joint actions of both the physician and the patient. And this was a method for treating chemotherapy. And the patient was going to self-administer folic acid, and the physician would be administering vitamin B12 as well as the chemotherapy drug. And that was a prerequisite, the folic acid self-administration, to getting that chemotherapy drug. So now We've got a physician and we've got a patient. There's no contract between them. Do we have joint infringement? No contract. All we have is product labeling. We've got a physician prescribing information that's being directed by the drug provider, as well as patient information. Well, the Federal Circuit concluded that we do have joint infringement, and you can attribute the actions of the patient to the physician and that the physician was directing and controlling it. Now, under the first prong, the Federal Circuit agreed that the chemotherapy drug itself, receiving that, was the benefit that the patient was getting, and that that benefit was being conditioned on the patient's compliance with the self-administration step. So in order to get access to the chemotherapy drug, the Federal Circuit concluded, evidence shows that the patient was going to have to follow those self-administration steps. So we've got conditioned benefit. And then with respect to the second prong, because of the prescription, which set out the dose and the timing and days for which you were going to have to take the folic acid, they also were establishing the timing for that performance.